and there's intimacy on the radio, and there's naturalness on the radio that can never be replicated on TV. The marvelous resurgence of radio as a political force in this country.
News-related radio programming is evolving.
There's a huge hole in our dialogue that can be filled by the synthesis of traditional radio and the freedom that comes from a live podcast. You're about to experience Cowboy State Politics Live. Here we go. Good morning, my friends, and welcome to yet another incredible installment of Cowboy State Politics Live. From very high above, all the puerile and vacuous forms of Wyoming mainstream. Whoa, hold on. Live broadcasting, always something to get into. Anyway, coming to you from the Cowboy State Politics Northern Command Studio in Sheridan, Wyoming. Good morning, my friends, and welcome to the program. I had an incredible birthday. Had dinner with the folks, got my new birthday present to me. It's an old Electro Voice Model 635 microphone. For some of you out there in the interwebs, that probably doesn't mean a whole lot. So let me give you the lowdown on it. I'm super, super excited about it. So Rush's microphone was an Electro Voice. It's RE320. That's what it was. It's almost identical to the silver Cowboy State Politics microphone, with just a couple of differences. Mine is an Electro Voice RE20, or 27. Now, it's pretty much the same as Rush's, except this one is made to kind of filter out ambient noise. So if you're in a place where, you know, you might hear trucks driving by outside, or there might be some noise, this one's perfect for it. You see, professional broadcast studios, like at the ridiculous radio station that broadcasts only liberal drivel, well, of course, they have walls that are made of probably 12 inches of foam, and nothing's getting in that sucker. But here at Cowboy State Politics Northern Command, I haven't quite got the studio up to that level yet. So we have the Electro Voice RE27. So anyway, Rush's microphone, it was the one that was made to sit in a soundproof booth, so wouldn't really be suited here. Oh, by the way, when I was at Glenn Beck's studio down in Dallas, Texas, I took some pictures of the Rush's original microphones. I bet you didn't know he had two of them, but he did. Anyway, I've got pictures of the golden EIB microphone that I'll post a little bit later after the program. So this Electro Voice 635. It's a microphone from the 1950s, and the whole reason why I bought it really was because it looked cool, and I thought it would make an excellent addition to the studio. So if you look at the studio, and of course you can't see it right now because the Ditto cam isn't fully operational yet, it's full of all sorts of old stuff. Like there's this old radio in the corner. I'm really, really a nostalgic person. And once I get the Ditto cam up, you'll see all the cool stuff in the studio. But this microphone was originally meant for like live broadcast, you know, at announcements, that sort of thing, maybe at a baseball game or a public address or something like that. And I thought that it would have this really cool old crackly microphone noise to it, but it doesn't. Let me prove it to you. How's that, my friends? Sounds pretty clear, doesn't it? Now, this microphone I'm talking to you on now is from the 1950s, and I'm telling you, I think it sounds fantastic. But since it is from the 1950s, and I haven't had a chance to test it all the way, let's go back to the other one. So anyway, my friends, I had a great birthday. Got a couple of really cool gifts from a very dear friend of mine. You might see that in the studio a little bit later anyway. So enough of that. let's get to the program. On Wednesday, I brought you the story of Redcoat Speaker of the House Albert Sommers playing his stupid Redcoat games. And basically what happened, if you hadn't listened to yesterday's program, is Representative Eklund stepped down from his committee work because he has lymphoma. Our prayers are with Representative Eklund. That's a tough disease to deal with, and we wish him he and his family all the best. Well, anyway, so that created some vacancies. And originally, the plan was that Sommers was going to put Redcoat Poisonberry Crago on select water to replace Representative Eklund. But in the interim, between when I got the information and the broadcast, Sommers decided to change it up a little bit. And it's actually much worse than what I told you about yesterday. You see, the majority floor leader, Chip Nyman, requested that he be put as vice chairman of Select Water. He's already on the Select Water committee. He just wanted to be vice chairman. And Chip, being a rancher, man, he's perfect for that committee. Every time I talk to him, he's sitting in his tractor. So perfect fit there. Well, of course, Redcoat Albert Sommers couldn't give the majority floor leader a win, and so he put himself as vice chairman on that committee. Not only that, though, he put Poisonberry Crago as the chairman of agriculture. Poisonberry only has a term and a half in the House of Representatives. The word tenure or experience or seniority doesn't come anywhere close to Poisonberry Crago. But the truth is, Albert Sommers, being the redcoat that he is, doesn't want representatives to speak for their constituents. He doesn't want you to have a voice on any of these committees. In fact, he wants to consolidate power in any way that he can. And the best way that he can is to take over those committees. Now, just to give you a little idea here. Now, with Poisonberry on agriculture, he has 6 committees. That's a heck of a lot of work. Sommers, Redcoat Albert Sommers, being the vice chair of Select Water now, has 8 committees. Count them, 8. Now, that's a little deceiving because a couple of those really don't do that much, like house rules, but 8 committees. Now, you have other representatives in the House that do have things like seniority and experience and things like that. But they, unfortunately, being conservative, only have 1 committee. 1. Speaker Sommers, 8. Mark Jennings, 1. And Chip? Well, Majority Leader Nyman now only has 4 committees, but really that doesn't count because one of them is the Rules Committee, and they don't talk about legislation. They talk about the rules. One of them is Management Audit. They don't really talk about legislation either. And one of them is Management Council. And they don't really talk about legislation either. So the only real committee that Majority Leader Nyman has is Select Water. Now, that doesn't make any it only makes sense if you look at Albert Sommers as the partisan hack that he is. Now, he's not interested in representation. He's not interested in giving you a voice on anything. He's just interested in his own political games and power. That's all it is. Redcoat Sommers and his pals his other redcoat pals, that's all they want to do is control everything down there. And they're doing a bang-up job of it. If you're a conservative, you don't have a voice in the House of Representatives at all. And you're certainly never going to have one with Albert Sommers. So I actually have, our now regular guest, is Joey Corrente. Of course, you know Joey. He started his new podcast, Just Blame Joey. Already has a great story to talk to you about today, and we'll get to that a little bit later in the program. Now, he is working with some new equipment, so I told him, why don't we just try to come on the program? We'll see if it works, and we'll go from there. So, Joey, welcome to the program again. Okay, looks like we're going to have some connection issues, so we'll just continue on. Joey, if you can hear me, work on your connection, and maybe you have to use your phone this time, and we'll figure out what the bugs were. But we'll continue on. Send me a note when you get it all figured out. So, President Biden, there's so many things that I could say. So many. I mean, he seems to have personal problems, political problems, all types of problems. And now he has impeachment problems. But it seems that his personal problems probably should be top of mind for every American right now, simply because we have a man in the Oval Office that can't find his underwear nor the pudding that he was just given. Not to mention, he probably doesn't even understand the difference between butterscotch and tapioca. So anyway, we were talking about Joe Biden and his personal problems. And I'll tell you, you can always figure out when it's actually becoming a political problem for a lot of these Democrats, and they're finally starting to admit it. So here we have Joe Scarborough, and he was talking on his morning program with this columnist with the last name Ignatius. And I think he writes for the New York Times. But this is striking. Now, Joe Scarborough, if you don't know anything about him, he started out as a Republican in the House of Representatives. And then, as normally happens, he was found out and he knew that he wasn't going to get reelected. And so he quit the House of Representatives. And now he is a Democrat hack on MSNBC. But listen to what he has to say.
Republican nomination. That's what he's got. He's got to look in the mirror, search his soul, and make that decision. And I wanted to raise that question. I'd like him to think that through carefully, because I have my concerns.
Well, and Willie, just to answer David's question, Mika and I, everybody we talk to, every political discussion, it talks a lot about Trump. But when it comes to Joe Biden, people say, man, he's too old to run, isn't he? I mean, he's not really going to run. When I say every discussion, I don't mean 99% of the discussions. Every discussion. We got it. I asked Reverend Al if he was hearing it all the time on our show this past week. He's hearing it as well. So, you know, we often will complain about Republicans who will say one thing about Donald Trump off the air and another on air. Well, let me just say, Democrats off the air will say Joe Biden's too old. Why is he running? On the air, they won't say that. So I commend David for at least raising the question. I mean, my question, of course, Willie, is who can do a better job as president as Joe Biden, and who can beat Donald Trump? I don't see a lot of Democrats out there. I don't see any Democrats out there right now that could do that.
Okay, not that many Democrats out there that can beat Donald Trump. Wow. Now, that's amazing coming from Joe Scarborough. I mean, he's the guy, him and his weird wife, Mika, he's the guy that would defend Biden all the way to the end. Now, he says, who can argue with Biden's policies? All of us. But now he's saying that Biden should really question as to whether or not he should even run. From The Blaze this morning, in an article entitled Federal Judge Rules Against Obama's DACA Amnesty. Now, this was a big deal that was pushed by the Biden administration. Even though Obama said that he didn't think it was constitutional and he didn't think that he could do this, he was going to do it anyway. So the Biden administration, they've decided they're going to push this too. And even though there's been numerous court challenges, they're still pressing forward, thinking that the executive branch, have the power to appropriate money. The power to appropriate money only resides with the House of Representatives. They hold the purse strings. But listen to this, quote, former President Barack Obama's controversial DACA migrant policy has been struck down in court by a federal judge, but it will likely be ultimately decided by the United States Supreme Court. U.S. District Judge Andrew Hanen has previously ruled against the program, but a technicality meant that he had to consider the order again. Quote, while sympathetic to the predicament of DACA recipients and their families, this court has expressed its concerns about the legality of the program for some time. The solution for these deficiencies lies with the legislature, not the executive or judicial branches, he added. Congress, for any number of reasons, has decided not to pass DACA-like legislation. And so what that means is that the administration just can't pass it on their own. They are not the legislature. They do not have the power to craft legislation. They do have the power, though, to veto or sign legislation. See, we have to have an equal separation of powers. That's how our system is set up in the Constitution. And just because Joe Biden thinks that he can or it's actually not Joe Biden, but it's people in his administration think that, you know, he could just sidestep the Constitution and sidestep Congress. That's why this thing is being held up. And, you know, it brings up another point, and I hope we can get Joey to chime in on this, because it looks like that maybe he's fixed his connection issues. But there's a big problem we have in, we say, oh, look at these poor people. Aren't they in terrible straits? They're poor. They don't have money to fill their refrigerator. I mean, you know the whole shtick. And so we're just going to pass this, you know, we're just going to sign this executive order, and we're just going to tell people what to do. Well, that's not how our system works. However desperate the plight of citizens may be, that doesn't mean that we can just do whatever we want without passing any laws. That's like we are a system of laws, not of men. And that means our government doesn't operate on feelings. See, all too often, not just at the federal level, but you see this down in Cheyenne, too, we operate on feelings. And that is not how government is run. Just because somebody's in a bad place doesn't mean the government can give your money to them to help them out, which I would contend that just giving people money doesn't help them out anyway. But you get the point that we don't operate on feelings. And this federal judge says, and I'll say it again, while sympathetic to the predicament of DACA recipients and their families, this court has expressed its concerns about the legality of the program for some time. So, Joey, what do you think about these governing based on feelings and not on law? Can you hear me now?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Perfect. You got her fixed. Go.
We got something going. Well, first of all, I want to apologize for the interruption earlier. I was channeling my inner Steve Harshman, but at least this time I was only cussing at myself. So when it comes down to the judicial branch interpreting the laws, it really goes back to the Constitution that separates the branches of government. And we do not have a system where we allow the judicial branch to legislate. So the interpretation of the law has to be just that, the interpretation of the law, not a suggestion or a rewriting of the law. And it also goes back to a great responsibility on the legislature, where they need to be doing their job the way it is laid out in the Constitution as representatives and administrators of our liberty on our behalf, not a bunch of goofballs that somehow got elected that decided to pass a bunch of feel-good measures because their emotions trump fact and legitimate responsibility. We see it all the time, and now we see the number one competitor with the people that should be doing some of this kind of work, the charities, the churches, the benevolent organizations that have been given, you know, tax-free status because they do the kind of work that is important to the people, but not the responsibility of the government. And the government is now their number one competitor, specifically because of things like this.
Exactly right. So, I mean, not only is does President Joe Biden have personal problems? Let me just give you the newest one. Listen to this. He was talking at a press conference in Vietnam, I believe. And this is, you've probably heard it already, but I want to play it on the program. Check this out.
As a matter of fact, I think it's less likely to cause that kind of conflict. I just think that there are other things on leaders' minds, and they respond to what's needed at the time. And look, nobody likes having celebrated international meetings if you don't know what you want at the meeting, if you don't have a game plan. He may have a game plan. He just hasn't shared it with me. But I tell you what, I don't know about you, but I'm going to go to bed.
I'm going to go to bed. That's exactly what we want to be hearing from the President of the United States. And this, I mean, this is a good example of a good example as to why I say that the president's personal problems, you know, whether has dementia or, you know, he's got, you know, Alzheimer's or whatever the case may be. The reason why that should be top of mind to you is this is the guy that has his fingers on the levers that run this country. I mean, literally has, I mean, the nuclear football goes with this guy everywhere he goes. And, you know, he can't even like tell you what he had for breakfast. And I don't think that I'm being hyperbolic with that. I'm just saying, I mean, we hear sound bites like this all of the time. In fact, I've got a whole montage from, I mean, it's about 6 minutes long and I can't even get through half of it. All of the crazy stuff that he said that, I mean, kind of proves that he's sort of out of his mind. And think about the people that are around him. I mean, what they're doing to him. Instead of just saying, okay, Joe, time to hang it up. You know, you need to retire. They're saying, no, no, Grandpa, keep going. So he's got all that, but he's also got impeachment problems now, because a couple days ago, Kevin McCarthy announced that he was going to start an impeachment proceeding in the House. And now I tell you all the time that words matter. And I say that for a reason, that all too often now, we try to change the definition of words to fit our particular circumstance. Truth is, most people don't know what the word impeachment means. So, to the 1828, impeachment, an accusation or charge brought against a public officer for maladministration in his office. In Great Britain, it is the privilege of the right of the House of Commons to impeach and the right of the House of Lords to try and determine impeachments. In the United States, it is the right of the House of Representatives to impeach and of the Senate to try and determine impeachments. In Great Britain, the House of Peers and in the United States, the Senate in the United States and the Senates in the several states are the high courts of impeachment. So impeachment is the charge, right? They're accusing the president of high crimes and misdemeanors. That's the phrase that's in the Constitution. So then, just so we're clear, what is a crime? Webster's 1828 defines it thusly, quote, an act which violates a law, divine or human, an act which violates a rule of moral duty, an offense against the laws of right prescribed by God or man, or against the rule of duty plainly implied in those laws. A crime may consist in omission or neglect, as well as in commission or positive transgression. The commander of a fortress who suffers the enemy to take possession by neglect is really a criminal, as one who voluntarily opens the gates without resistance. So that's the original definition of what is meant by crime. Okay, it's pretty much the same that we think of today. You violate a law, you are guilty of a crime. So then, what is meant by the word misdemeanor? Now, most of us think that those are low-level crimes, that those are, you know, maybe jaywalking or speeding or there's any number of them. We look at them as crimes that don't rise to the level of the district court. They're lower level crimes. So Webster's 1828 defines misdemeanor as, in law, and this is fascinating, listen very, very carefully to the language, in law, an offense of less atrocious nature than a crime. Crimes and misdemeanors are mere synonymous terms, but in common usage, the word crime is made to denote offenses of a deeper and more atrocious dye, while small faults and omissions of less consequence are comprised under the gentler name of misdemeanors. So in the Constitution, it says crimes and misdemeanors. So it covers both what we would say were probably felonies, and it also covers smaller, low-level crimes. But if you look at the original definition of the word misdemeanor, it can include other things. So before I go on, Joey, why don't you just chime in for us on this whole Biden impeachment real quickly, and then I want to discuss the first president who was impeached and just draw some parallels. So go ahead, Joe.
Well, you do happen to be talking to Mr. Misdemeanor himself, Jailbird Joey, so I have a little bit of insight on this specifically when it comes to the impeachment process. And the way I break it down for people is, first of all, even though it's dealing with crimes, the impeachment process is a purely political process. It is not a judicial process. I spoke earlier about the separation of the equal branches of government. If you are impeached by your lower house, in this case, it would be the House of Representatives, it's basically a grand jury. They need to bring charges, and then they need to support those charges with evidence and all of the procedures that would go with a grand jury outlined in the Constitution. It's called the due process of law. We've seen that not happen before because it is purely a political measure. Now, if that impeachment is held up by the House of Representatives. Then it goes to a trial in the Senate, and that trial is not a criminal trial. It is based on what they believe is a crime, but they will decide whether the recommendation from the House warrants removal of the president for that crime, but they still are not adjudicated a criminal because they are not a court of law. It would be like if you happen to have a job and you are arrested for something or charged with something and your job fired you based on you violated our workplace policies based on what we see in the evidence of your charge and you lose your job. But then you go to court and you're found not guilty or the case is dismissed. You still don't have your job, and they were well within their legal rights to remove you from their employ based on the evidence they saw at the time. But it doesn't make you a criminal. Only a court can find you guilty of a crime and make you a criminal. So in these cases, I think that we'll see a lot of the same we saw with the last president and the impeachment they did there. It'll be very political. It'll be very personal. It will not be based on any readily apparent evidence that they'll be willing to present to the people. This one might be a little different because I believe the Republicans will say, nope, this evidence is here and we are held accountable by the people first, so they need to see it. But it will be a purely political action. What will need to happen is the Senate will need to find him guilty to remove him. And based on the makeup of the Senate, I don't see that happening regardless of what the House brings and what actual evidence is there.
Okay, exactly right. So from the definitions, from what Joey just told us, that impeachment covers a couple different things. It covers actual crimes, and it covers misdemeanors and less than misdemeanors. I think the example you used, Joey, of getting fired from your job is absolutely apropos, simply because you're fired from your job for not something specifically you did wrong, didn't violate a crime or a law at work. You violated one of their policies, which may or may not be a law, but you still got fired. So there's three levels in an impeachment, and he's absolutely correct that it's a political maneuver. So I just looked down at the clock, and we are way long, so we're going to take a quick break, and then when we come back, I'm going to tell you about the first impeached president, and then we'll draw some parallels. Yeah, it's still summer, but hunting season is not that far away, and it's time for you to start gearing up for it. I know, that's going to make the wife extraordinarily happy, but it has to be done. One of the best things that you can put in your hunting pack is a pair of really warm socks. And the best socks that I have ever worn are made by the Buffalo Wool Company. Most of the time, the first thing to get cold on my body are my feet. And being a diabetic like I am, I'm really, really sensitive to it. Now, I've tried Pendleton wool socks and just about every kind of wool sock that you could possibly imagine, and nothing compares to these Buffalo Wool Company socks. To get you a pair, go to their website, thebuffalowoolco.com. Trust me, you are not going to be disappointed. Wyoming is one of the most sought-after places to live. I talk about it all the time on this program. There's a lot of people that want to move to our great state. There's beautiful mountain vistas all the way from Sheridan to Saratoga and from Hewlett all the way to Jackson. It's an amazing place, and there's a ton of people that are moving here. If you're buying or selling, you need a real estate agent with experience. The best person to talk to is Rebecca Bextel at Compass Real Estate. Last year, she sold $25 million worth of property all across the state of Wyoming, from small residential properties all the way up to giant ranches. She's lived in Jackson for 20 years and has her fingers on the pulse of the real estate market all across the state of Wyoming. So it doesn't matter what type of property you're looking for or if you're thinking about selling, give Rebecca a call, 307-699-3519. That's Rebecca Bextel at Compass Real Estate. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the program. David Iverson behind the silver cowboy state politics microphone, broadcasting to you flawlessly across the interwebs from the Cowboy State Politics Northern Command Studio. I'm joined today by Joey Correnti. He's the host of Just Blame Joey, a new podcast that he launched. And we're going to talk about one of the stories that he broke here in just a minute. But first, I want to finish this discussion about impeachment that we started before the break. So there haven't really been that many impeachments in American history, certainly not that many of presidents. You've got Andrew Johnson, Richard Nixon, Bill Clinton, Donald Trump a couple of times, and now we have an impeachment inquiry into Joe Biden. So only recently has this become a regular thing. It's not supposed to be a regular thing. That's why it's so difficult to impeach a president, why there's processes and there are procedures that are set up by the Constitution that tell you exactly how to get rid of a president. But the first impeachment, and this one's fascinating because the guy that they impeached is kind of a redcoat, not in the way that we think about it. Well, actually, yeah. So his name was Andrew Johnson, and he was the vice president to Abraham Lincoln and became president after Lincoln was assassinated. And there's a couple of interesting points, and I got all this off of the Senate, U.S. Senate website, and you can go look it up. But here's what it says. Johnson, and all of this came to a head when Johnson vetoed legislation that Congress had passed to protect the rights of those who had been freed from slavery. Oh, I should back up. So the reason why Lincoln chose Andrew Johnson to be his running mate is he publicly professed his loyalty to the Union. I mean, we were right in the middle of the Civil War, and he said he was loyal to the Union. So that's why Lincoln pretty much chose him. And Johnson was a pretty good orator, not really all that well educated, but I mean, the guy could speak. I mean, very, 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 very eloquent. So anyway, all of this came to a head when Johnson vetoed legislation that would have protected the rights of former slaves. This clash culminated in the House of Representatives voting on February 24, 1868, to impeach the president. On March 5th, the trial began in the Senate, where Republicans held more seats than the two-thirds majority required to remove Johnson. When the trial concluded on May 16th, however, he was acquitted. Now, just kind of an editorial note on what it says on the Senate website. Listen to this sentence, quote, "The president had won acquittal, not because of a majority of senators supported his policies, but because a sufficient minority wished to protect the office of the president and preserve the constitutional balance of power." Okay, first of all, there's no way that anybody could have known that. Maybe Johnson's lawyer just persuaded the Senate to acquit him. This entire article on the U.S. Senate website is full of Democrat talking points. It's amazing. Every time they refer to Republicans, they call them radical Republicans. Just an aside note. So back to the article. In March of 1862, President Lincoln rewarded Johnson's loyalty with appointment as a military governor of Tennessee. When Lincoln sought a second presidential term in 1864 and needed the support of, quote, Union Democrats, he chose Johnson as his running mate. Johnson became vice president right after Lincoln was shot. Now, this whole impeachment became kind of a farce. Now, it's true that Johnson vetoed a lot of legislation that would have protected former slaves. And there were a couple of appointments back and forth. And this is the real reason why they impeached him. Johnson vetoed what was called the Freedmen's Bureau Act. And that was to prevent the president from hiring and firing certain cabinet members. If they were approved by the Senate, the bill said, they had to be fired by the Senate. So it limited his powers. But in February of 1866, he broke the final ties with his Republican opponents in Congress. They responded with the 14th and 15th Amendment to the Constitution, promising political rights to African Americans. In March of 1867, they all passed. The Tenure of Office Act, oops, that's the one I was referring to earlier, which was designed to limit the president's ability to shape his cabinet by requiring that not only appointments, but also dismissals were approved by the Senate. So there were several appointments that went back and forth, and Johnson nominated somebody for a cabinet position when Congress was not in session. So when Congress got back into session, they immediately removed that person from his cabinet, and this went back and forth. And so there was a whole bunch of articles of impeachment that were drawn up in the House of Representatives. For example, Article 1 stated that Johnson ordered Stanton, that's one of the appointments, removed with the intent to violate the act. Articles 2 and 3 alleged the appointment of Thomas, that's the guy to replace Stanton, without the advice and consent of the Senate, which was a further violation of the Constitution. Articles 4 through 7 accused Johnson of conspiring with Thomas to remove Stanton. And here's the interesting one. This was finally adopted by as Article 10 in the impeachment proceedings. It was proposed by Benjamin Butler, and listen to what it said. He charged that Johnson was making speeches, quote, with a loud voice, certain intemperate, inflammatory, and scandalous harangues with the intent to disgrace Congress. This article was initially rejected, but later adopted as Article 10. So what I'm telling you is the first impeachment, Congress did have real grounds to impeach the president, but it also included some other political things that may not be included as crimes or misdemeanors. But remember, when we looked at the definition of misdemeanor, it included things other than crimes. Okay, so there was the first one. But now we have President Biden, who's very clearly, I mean, I think that there's very clear evidence that he absolutely violated the law. I mean, he's received millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars. And the only job he's ever had has been as a politician. You don't get that many billions without selling books or something or giving speeches or I don't know. But he was given a ton of money by foreign governments, foreign people in governments. A lot of them are not very sympathetic to the United States. So, I guess my point with these whole two segments is there are political problems, he's got personal problems, and he absolutely has impeachment problems now. So one of the reasons I wanted to have Joey on is there's a situation that's been developing down in Hanna, Wyoming, and it all came to a head, and there's an article on the CowPie about this right now, but it all came to a head at a town council meeting the other night, and needless to say, the residents of Hanna were a little fired up. Here's what resident Otis Graves had to say, and then we'll let Joey tell us exactly what happened since he was there.
Hey, my name is Otis Graves. I'll guarantee you, what's going on right now today is a farce. It's a bunch of bullshit.
Beep.
In my book. Have we followed them? No, we have did not.
No.
Should they be followed? Maybe we need to tweak them a little bit, but what's going on here today is a farce in my book.
All right, Joey. So you were there. You were our faithful correspondent at this meeting. Give us a lowdown. What happened in Hanna, Wyoming at the town council meeting?
Well, first, I apologize for the quality of the audio. You can only get so good in a large room like that. And that's not Otis Graves. That's Oaks Briggs, Oaks like the tree. And he was actually the first public speaker. And what he said basically pointed to the fact that there's already an ordinance on the books. And when he says, have we been following it, he didn't mean the people. Have they been following it? He meant the town. Have you been enforcing it? And the fact is they hadn't for years, and now they want to strengthen it. And what the gist of the changes to the ordinance was relates to the fact that Hanna doesn't have a town marshal right now, and they're contracted with the sheriff's office to provide police services. So they have no way of enforcing this, even though they hadn't enforced the old ordinance very much in the past. But they are in a desperate revenue situation. So all this really was on its face was a way to usurp the protections of the people by requiring that a proper police officer enforce the law or a proper code officer enforce an ordinance through the use of at least the municipal judge when it comes to addressing these issues. And it really wasn't about, it included things like grass and trash and firewood. But what they really put in there was giving the mayor the right to direct an unelected and non certified police officer and the code enforcement officer the right to trespass on your property and remove your private property, claiming it's a nuisance without a warrant from a judge. And anytime they felt like it, arbitrarily could decide any given individual was in violation of that ordinance. And as soon as they were in violation of that ordinance, starting on day 15 of being notified, they'd be fined $750 a day until the mayor felt that the ordinance was satisfied and the nuisance was abated. So it was a huge issue and definitely a revenue collection and money grab. And the people of Hanna really felt like not only was it overbearing, but it was an attempt by the mayor to put people in a position where they couldn't pay these fines and would have to forfeit their homes because the mayor's been in town buying up and improving for his own personal gain a lot of properties in town. So there's a myriad of situations that are surrounding this, but the specific language of the ordinance not only increased the hardship on the people on an ordinance that already wasn't being enforced, it gave more power to the local government to do so without due process of law. And really, it just was unpalatable across the board, not only, you know, personally, but I found it to be constitutionally offensive because they went out of their way to remove all the language, including a judge's ruling on whether that property could be seized based on the nuisance violation.
Well said. Now, here's another soundbite of one of the attendees to that meeting talking about that very thing.
I want us to be a community, not in fear of you, John, which is what people perceive, and perception is everything. I left a very high-level IT job to be here because I wanted freedom over cash. Yeah. And now I'm afraid that you take my property arbitrarily with these rules that you set, and that is my fear, that you can come and say, I don't like your land, I don't like your property. Well, damn it, John, I don't care.
See, I mean, exactly as Joey said, I mean, the ordinance basically said that the city could come seize your property if they think it's a nuisance. And I think that this speaks to a larger issue, that you're more likely to lose your liberty at the local level than you are at from the federal government or the state government. Though, I mean, those dangers exist too. But usually with a local town council, typically you don't have, you know, lawyers on the town council. You don't have people that a lot of times you don't have people that understand the Constitution. But, you know, you're way more likely to see some sort of overbearing ordinance at the local level rather than at the state or or at the federal level. There's a similar ordinance in Buffalo that unfortunately it passed. And it basically says that you can't have your grass any taller than 6 inches. And if your grass is taller than 6 inches, they can fine you. First of all, one of the main, perhaps not one of the, but might have been the most important things that our founders were worried about was your right to property. In fact, in the original draft, the words pursuit of happiness didn't exist. It said life, liberty, and property. And the reason that word was taken out is for fear of the Southern colonies saying that, aha, you know, slaves are our property, therefore we have a right to them. So that word property was changed to pursuit of happiness. And in America, at least until the Hanna Town Council got a hold of it, you had the right to your own personal property. It's yours. You know, if you wanted to put a sign in the front yard that said, screw the cops, you can do that. I wouldn't suggest it because it probably wouldn't end up too good for you when you're out driving around. But it's your personal property. You can do with it as you choose. And the problem is there's a lot of these little town councils that are passing ordinances. And there was one of them. It may have been this exact ordinance. You could interpret it to mean they could force you to wear a mask. Wasn't that what you were telling me, Joey?
In Hanna, the existing ordinance that they were trying to improve already included specific language saying a nuisance would also include, and actually right now on the books does include, any situation that may contribute to the spread of disease. So that's already on the books, and it was on the books back in 2010. So I can see the intent, but now that we've gone through COVID round one and we're gearing up for COVID, you know, round two, the Canadian Kung Flu, this is really problematic because now the town council, or actually the way it's written, the mayor himself can say, we have a mask ordinance in town, a municipal ordinance or a municipal, regulation or whatever, that's not a law. And since you're not wearing a mask, we're going to charge you, your spouse, and each of your children $750 a day. Well, right now it's going back to the old ordinance, so it's $100 a day. But still, they have the legal right on the books to charge people for not complying with their COVID regulations at the municipal level, which is ridiculous because most of that is covered in Title 35, the healthcare statutes. And if the governor and the county are putting things into place that the sheriff won't enforce, the way they're going to get you is by having a town level ordinance where they're, you know, Barney Fife, rink-a-dink marshal will come and collect revenue because you're not following what they think is important.
Yeah, exactly right. And this is one of the main reasons why I tell you that every office is important. You know, sometimes we think that there are some elected offices that, well, you know, I mean, it's not really all that important, but they all are, all the way from the precinct level, city council, county commissioners, and up. But every single school board, another one, super important. But every elected office is important simply because you'll get people on there that they've got their own agenda and they don't believe in liberty, or they don't know what it is, and they're just going to push their own liberal redcoat agenda. After the break, Joey and I are going to talk about how we didn't get invited to a particular meeting that's happening tonight in Natrona County. And frankly, we absolutely should have been. We offered, they turned us down. But we're going to talk about that after the break. We'll finish up the program in just a second, but first, one more absolutely obscene profit timeout. Are you the type of person that thinks it's a good idea to go buy a box of hair color at Walmart, do it yourself, and then when it doesn't turn out quite right, why not just try to do it again? That, my friends, is how you end up with orange hair. Let's be honest, not that many of us know exactly what is going on with that box of hair color. That's why you just shouldn't do it. A better idea is just to call Christine at the Bombshell Studio. She's a certified Redken specialist, and she knows exactly how to get you the exact look that you've been wanting. All the while to keep your hair healthy, which is exactly the opposite of what will happen if you go and try to do it yourself. So give Christine a call. Her phone number is 307-752-4844. That's Christine at the Bombshell Studio.
Do you like hot wings? Yeah, me too. In fact, I'm obsessed with them. And the best hot wings in the state of Wyoming are from the Wing It Food Truck. They travel around the state, going from town to town. All you have to do is go to their Facebook page, the Wing It Food Truck, or go to cowboystatepolitics.com and look underneath the sponsors tab, and you'll find their schedule there. You know, I personally recommend the garlic parmesan wings. They're absolutely amazing, but they've got several other different flavors, not just hot wings or garlic parmesan. You'll find exactly what you've been missing this entire time. So go to the website, cowboystatepolitics.com, and look underneath the sponsors tab. And that way, you can plan your entire week around where the Wing It food truck is going to be.
I get it. Actual summer was really kind of short in Wyoming. And we all know what that means. Fall is on the way. And with it comes some pretty unpredictable temperatures. You need to be prepared for all of it. Sometimes we have all four seasons in the same week. One of the best ways that you can do that is to get a nice warm hat from New Trend Hats. They have a wide variety of hats for both men and women, and they're sure to keep those ears of yours nice and toasty warm. So go to their website, newtrendhats.com, and make sure you're prepared for whatever is coming.
And now, the conclusion to the program.
Welcome back to the program. David Iverson, documented to be almost always right 98.82% of the time. I have to tell you, my friends, I just love figuring out those numbers because they always go up. Well, almost always. I mean, sometimes there's a correction, but all journalists issue corrections and retractions. The best journalists do. And that is something that you don't see from the mainstream Wyoming press. They would never tell you that they made a mistake. And if they did, they'd bury it back on page 85D and you'd never notice it. So the only time those numbers go down is when I actually do issue a retraction, which has only happened 7 times in the history of Cowboy State politics. So anyway, the numbers continue to go up. We are documented to be almost always right, and we will continue to do that. So Joey, we absolutely should have been invited to a meeting that's going to happen tonight. And I mean, what happened? Do you think our invitation got lost in the mail, or what do you think's going on there?
Well, I don't know if we should have definitely been invited, but our request to fill in for the no-show guest that they know they're going to have at least should have been recognized. So we weren't rejected. We were ignored. We haven't gotten any response from Chairman Joe McGuire of the Natrona County Republican Party when we sent out a response to an email that he had sent to the State Central Committee of the Republican Party inviting all Wyomingites, not just Republicans, to join and participate in this unmasking of Wyo Rhino debate hosted by Rod Miller and supposedly going to be a fundraiser for the Natrona County Republican Party, although this event was never approved by their central committee. And when questioned by one of their members, is the money raised going to go to the party paying their county shares? There was never a response. So we jumped in on that email chain and offered very graciously to stand in for Wild Rhino and to debate, at least on their behalf, from our perspective, but mostly to answer the question that is being asked by the Natrona County Republican Party, which is, why do you think that all of these individuals are rhinos? What do you mean by it? And how do you back it up? Because we have those people here. And that's definitely a conversation you and I would be happy to have with them.
Absolutely. In fact, I was fully prepared to explain exactly why former Redcoat Representative Joe McGuire is most definitely a rhino. Or Redcoat. Well, I mean, you take your pick. I prefer Redcoat. But Joey's right. The reason why we call these folks Redcoats or Rhinos is not just because we don't like them. Most of them we don't. However, there's quantifiable data to prove that their voting record really is one of a Democrat. I talk about it all the time on the program. In fact, yesterday, I went to great detail as to why Redcoat Speaker of the House Albert Sommers is a Redcoat, and they vote with the Democrats 85% of the time, and so do most of the folks that were going to be at this Natrona County business. I mean, guys like Tom Walters, he has one of the worst voting records in the Wyoming legislature. Joe McGuire, Kevin O'Hearn, he's another one that, man, what a disappointment that guy was going to be. But I think a more interesting story, I mean, their meeting they're holding tonight, the farce of a debate. And I mean, it takes a lot of courage to invite somebody that you know is not going to show up to a debate. I mean, I think it would be hilarious if they did. But I mean, to invite somebody that you know for a fact isn't going to be there doesn't take a heck of a lot of courage. And it takes even less courage to accept an invitation from, you know, two people that would gladly debate them on the merits of their question. But I think a more interesting aspect of this story is an article that was published yesterday in the Cowpie, and it was entitled, Who's Behind the Curtain at Conservative Ranking Website Wyo Rhino? And this sucker is 7 pages long, and they go into painstaking detail about how they looked at all of the internet records, and there's this deal on the internet, it's called Who Is. You can go to Google, and you can type in Who Is, and then the domain name, and it will give you a report of everything that's registered with that domain. Now, most of them are registered private. CowboyStatePolitics.com is one of those that's issued that says it's private. And I guess it was Leo Wolfson. Yeah, it was Trotsky that wrote this article. He goes through painstaking detail how there's 3 or 4 websites. One of them is Liberty's Place for You. And there's a couple others, but all of them are hosted at the same place and they all have the same characteristics in their Who Is data. But what Trotsky doesn't point out is that people hire other people to build websites because a lot of us don't know what the heck we're doing. For example, I'm pretty good at handling cowboystatepolitics.com, but if there was some sort of database or data that I wanted to display on the website, I don't have a clue where to get started. And so people hire professionals or experts in that area to do it for them. And if you've ever been to wildrhino.com, there's a lot of data that's displayed, and most of it is in the form of a PDF. That's pretty easy to show. But just because like a couple of details online are similar, that doesn't mean it's the same person. In fact, it could be very different people. But Joey, why do you think that that Wild Rhino is so interested in uncovering, or that CalPi is so interested in uncovering who is behind Wild Rhino?
Well, I think initially it's because they take the revelation of who these individual representatives are based on their voting record. They take it personally. They think it's a personal attack, and it's not. It's a revealing of the record of how these individuals vote, regardless of how they campaign. Well, the question that is brought up for me is, let's say Wild Rhino did show up, and even if you bullied him into a corner or her into a corner and made him look pathetic, would knowing who the individual who runs that site is change the voting record of any of these representatives anyway? They are who they are. So I don't know why they think that having the individual named and identified changes anything. I read in an opinion column that the host or MC for this event believes that it's cowardly to hide behind a pen name, which is very interesting considering a majority of our founding fathers issued documents in support of what they were trying to do in creating our Constitution and our nation under pen names, just so that it wouldn't have certain influence or get certain detraction. They wanted the focus to be on the content of what they were saying. So if that particular host of this event thinks that it's cowardly to do political action without trying to attach it to a specific name for whatever reason, then you're pointing a big finger at our founding fathers who did the exact same thing because they wanted the data and the content and the message focused on, not the person.
That, and Joe McGuire has made no bones about calling the activities of Wild Rhino electioneering. He's claiming that the website Wild Rhino is basically campaigning on behalf of more conservative candidates. And in Wyoming, if you're electioneering, you have to disclose who's doing it. But like Joey said, the big question is, are they, or is it just data? Is there data backing up the scores? And absolutely there is. And if you're listing everybody that's there and you can back up those scores, then there's no reason why you have to say who is responsible for it or who paid for it. That's ridiculous. And Joey's last point about the founding fathers, there's a big reason why they wrote the Federalist Papers under a pen name. They wanted it to be accepted generally. They wanted the Federalist Papers to be general arguments so that everybody could read them, and they wouldn't attach those arguments to a specific person. Because members of the Constitutional Convention, they didn't all agree on everything. In fact, some of them had very, very, very different viewpoints on how the Constitution was going to be structured. In fact, one of them, how they decided on representation, it almost derailed the whole thing. And it wasn't until somebody sent for George Washington and he showed up that he got everything back on track. So there were big disagreements when the Federalist Papers were written, and they were published under a pen name for that very reason. So our country has a long history of publishing political works that are written anonymously to prove a point. There's a very famous one, and many people probably don't remember this one, but it was a little book. I guess we could call it a pamphlet, but it was a little book. I mean, it couldn't have been more than 3x5, maybe a little bit bigger, but it was entitled Slick Willie, and it was published by a pen name, and the pen name was Boston Tea Party. As it turned out, it was a guy from Gillette that wrote the book. And he actually wrote a couple of them. But, you know, this is that book. It went across the United States simply because of the arguments that were made in it. And I mean, it was kind of a funny little book to read. But we have a long history of doing that. And just because Joe McGuire thinks that whomever runs Wyo Rhino absolutely has to disclose who they are, that doesn't make it so. Yeah, Joe McGuire is a lawyer, but that doesn't necessarily mean that he's a good one. As for our offer to debate in their stead, they didn't respond to me. They didn't respond to Joey. And I was absolutely prepared to tell them exactly what their voting records are, including Joe McGuire. And, you know, it's probably, you know, it, on their behalf, it was probably a good decision not to let us anywhere near a microphone. I don't think that would have turned out very good for them at all. Do you, Joey?
I don't. I believe that's the main reason why we were ignored. And I believe that both of us were so well prepared, and our intent would be to do this not in defense of Wyo Rhino, whoever they are, or to rub anything in the noses of the Natrona County Republican Party or the representatives, but to stand up and give that voice back to the people, the information and the processes that we go through to discern things. We were so ready to do that people are still going to get a chance to hear what we would have said if they keep an eye out for early November, the Wyoming Republican Party State Central Committee meeting in Weston County. I believe we've been invited to do just that in lieu of doing it for the Natrona County Republican Party. So the people aren't going to miss out, and our intent will be met by making sure this information is getting out there, regardless of who benefits or profits from it individually or as a group, because the people deserve to know why we believe what we're saying is true.
Exactly right. And, you know, I mean, there are several rating sites in Wyoming. The one that's most accurate, or I mean, my opinion, of course, my not so humble opinion, the one that I think is the most accurate is Wyo Vote. And they basically rate every single roll call vote that happens in the legislature. And there's a lot of people, from what I understand, there's a lot of people that are involved in it. And yeah, all the votes are rated according to the Republican Party platform. But when you get a large number of people submitting data, it's very unlikely that you're going to have any sort of statistical error, unless, of course, it's just like a data entry error. But it rates every single roll call vote, and then they spit out, you know, 1 through 93, how people stack up. There's another one, Evidence-Based Wyoming, and the only thing, that one is run by a guy named Doug Girard, and the only thing he does is he tracks how often somebody votes with the Democrats and how often they vote with the Republicans. And that's the core of his database. Now, we might argue with some of his conclusions that he draws out of it, but the data, it's black and white, cut and dried. You can't argue with it. And that's the problem that all of these redcoats have, is they don't want you to know exactly what they're doing in Cheyenne. If you did know, you'd kick most of them out on your ear, or you'd be going for the pitchforks and torches and maybe the bucket of tar. I mean, it's a lot of it is really horrendous, and you don't really grasp the full scope of it unless you spend time in the Wyoming Capitol. That's why I spent 2 months down in Cheyenne during last session, so I could report to you what was happening. And, you know, admittedly, I was only able to give you a snapshot, but those snapshots were very, very revealing about what these people are doing. And let me tell you, my friends, they absolutely hate being exposed. Every day when I sat up in the gallery, they would look up from the floor and just glare at me. Not because that I'm bold, that I'm unafraid, and that I'm brash. Sometimes it's because I was exposing the truth, exposing who these people are and what they act like when they're down in Cheyenne. Because most of us, we're too darn busy in our own lives to be able to pay attention to what all these fools are doing down there. We just don't have the time. That's why we elect them. They are our representative. And, you know, we go through a campaign process to supposedly to find out who they are and, you know, what they believe. And, you know, we're a trusting bunch here in Wyoming. So we trust that they're going to do what they tell us they're going to do. And the truth is, they don't most of the time. So that's why sites like Wild Rhino exist. And, you know, that's one secret that I have tried to uncover just for my own personal edification. But I'm a pretty good researcher, but I have not been able to figure out who runs that thing. And in my opinion, as it should be. What do you think, Joey?
Well, I've said before on your show, I don't lean into these voting rating sites very much. I appreciate the raw data and a lot of them. But they all have different ways of coming to a conclusion. The interesting thing is that almost all of them come to the same conclusion. So I don't put a lot of stock in it, but that's because I'm one of the people that has the time to do all that myself. So I cross-check their data sources, and really it all comes down to what the journal entry in WildEdge says. And unfortunately, you have to wait for LSO to post that to find out what happened on any roll call vote. But I think the data is sound. I'm not worried about who runs what. I have my own opinions of each of these. And in light of this issue and Natrona County being so worried about who runs what, it has inspired me to start putting together. And by the next legislative session in February, I'll be prepared to start presenting the data on just blame Joey votes. And this is not going to be based on, you know, my feelings or, you know, anything anybody else does. I'm not going to say good, bad, or indifferent. I'm going to take a bill. I'm going to read it through. I'm going to apply my 10 steps for legislative approval and support to it. Those will be published, what those standards are. And then you're going to find out how I would have voted on a bill. And the results will be who voted the way I would have and who did not. So if anybody wants to come after a person and say, oh, it's subjective, I'm going to give them the perfect opportunity, but they're still going to have to argue the data and the process that I used. Other than that, you know, you and I offered, and now we've publicized it on your show that we were willing to debate. So I wouldn't be surprised if requests for debates outside of this issue came up. Any individual that wants to snipe at us or think they can use their bully pulpit against us will probably try to put us in a position where, you know, they think they're going to get one over on us. And I'm sure we're open to that. I know that I am. And again, we're going to present that same level of information that would have presented at the Natrona County meeting tonight. We're going to present that in Weston County. I believe November 3rd and 4th. We'll have to give you some updates as that gets put together. But we're trucking along. We're bringing the data, and people are allowed to feel how they want to feel about it, but your feelings don't change the facts. So with that, you know, take a look at what David Iverson's doing. He's always got data up. I'm working on getting the website finished off so we can start putting the data at justblamejoey.com up for everything we're saying and doing. And little hint to something special coming up. If you happen to have some time available on October 7th, keep that date open. Over the next week, I believe you'll be hearing about some things, and October 7th is a date you definitely want to have free.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I'm pretty excited about it. But a lot of this, like the blame for, you know, all of this, you know, ratings websites, you know, you not knowing what's happening in Cheyenne really is the fault of the media. They're not interested. And I'm by media, I'm using the collective media that, you know, it's all of them. It's the Casper Star. It's the Cow Pie. It's your local newspapers. Believe it or not, a lot of your local newspapers are owned by a very small and selective group of people. And very rarely do they tell you exactly what's going on. They're not interested in giving you the facts anymore. However, I am, and I know Joey is, and so we're just going to continue doing what we're doing. Now, there's a lot of exciting stuff that's going to be coming, and make sure that you don't miss a minute of my program or Joey's program, because we're going to be letting details out about what's coming here really, really soon. It's going to be really exciting, and I know that that you're going to absolutely love it. A couple of notes before I let you go for this morning. If you happen to be around Sheridan or Buffalo or in the vicinity, tonight, starting at 6:30 at the Story Women's Club, there's an event with myself and Leah Southwell from the John Birch Society. We're going to talk about solutions the states have that are in the Constitution. There's a lot of them that states really aren't taking advantage of. We're going to talk about some of them. Also, we're going to discuss why having a convention of states would be a really, really bad idea. So if you want to take part in a what's going to be a really interesting discussion, it's tonight at 6:30 at the Story Women's Club. It's going to be a really good time. And I think that's about it, unless you've got anything coming up, Joey, that you want to make people aware of.
Well, just to recap, people start writing down dates. November 3rd and 4th, David Iverson and myself will be in Weston County. And make sure if you have time and the ability to travel, you're out there supporting that fine rural community and county who does great things with liberty-minded constitutional conservative within the Republican Party. It'll be a great time. We're going to have a lot of fun, and we're going to bring you that information that should have been brought to Natrona County tonight. Keep October 7th open, especially if you're in the northern part of the state. We got something big coming up. You'll hear a lot more about that next week. And as a standard, I'm going to try to maintain immediately following David Iverson's Cowboy State Politics Live on Thursdays. I will attempt to post an episode. I have one in the chute ready to go. So at 12 o'clock, you will be able to access Just Blame Joey. And you can get that on Podbean and anywhere you can get Cowboy State Politics as well. So make sure you're giving that a listen. And it's a real special episode today. We got some friends coming in, and we're going to do something new. So other than that, I appreciate being here and sharing your audience with you all the time, David. And it's like you said, it's all got to start at the local level. So we're not here to do the work for you. We're here to help you find the table you need to take your seat at and start fighting your fight. Because the way they take down a building is by cracking the foundation, not by leaking into the roof.
Well said. Don't forget to share and follow and subscribe to the program. Please share Cowboy State Politics with your friends. Send them a link. Every time I post a show, you can just hit easily. You can easily hit forward. So share the show with everybody and make sure that you follow the program. You can do that in Podbean or right from the website. Also, don't forget to sign up for the Cowboy State Politics newsletter if you haven't already. Probably starting tomorrow, I'll be sending out updates on the program and tell you what's happened during the week and what might be coming in the next week. But for now, from the base of the Bighorns, at the Cowboy State Politics Northern Command Studio in Sheridan, Wyoming, I'm David Iverson, and this is the one and only Cowboy State Politics.